Death May Surprise Us, a thriller in 6 episodes by Ted Willis. Dramatized by him from his novel of the same name. Part 5, Confession. Starring Leslie Sands as Jack Stoddart, Mary Wimbush as Jess Stoddart, Cyril Shapps as Victor, and Jeffrey Matthews as Commander Knowles. Death May Surprise Us.
The beginning of the breakthrough. That's what Commander Knowles was to call the latest development in his investigation into the kidnapping of the Prime Minister and his wife. A week in which all the massive resources of the police and the security services were mobilized had produced very little. But Knowles had uncovered a rather tenuous link between a girl named Sue Swinton and one of the kidnappers. It didn't make me too happy, because Sue happened to be my secretary.
Away for the weekend. Any idea where she's gone?
No, Commander, I haven't, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. Can I help?
No, I don't think so. You see, Mr. Lashwood, I want to ask her why she lied to me.
Sue? Why would she do that?
You were there. She said she hardly knew the man who called himself George Sharp.
Well, I never saw them together, except at party meetings with lots of other people.
But someone did see them together, at Brighton 3 weeks ago. What's that, a couple of hundred miles away? And it was a Saturday. Does that suggest that she hardly knew him? Sounds like a weekend away to me.
Okay, maybe you're right. I don't keep a check on Sue's private life. But if you're suggesting that she's tied up with the kidnapping, I'd find that hard to credit.
But if she were, it would explain a lot, wouldn't it? From the point of view of the kidnappers, she's in a key position. This is the Prime Minister's constituency. You are his parliamentary agent, and Sue Swinton is your secretary.
Yes.
She'd have access to details of the PM's visits to the area, and she'd know all about the timetable for the fete, right?
Yes, it's true, but young Sue? Good God, she's a baby. 20, that's all.
It can be a dangerous age. Is she particularly left-wing, Mr. Lashwood?
Well, yes. I wouldn't have much respect for her at her age if she wasn't.
Oh, yes?
But she's not one of the wild ones. Well, you've seen her. She looks after herself, dresses well, doesn't shove her ideas down people's throats.
You're pretty defensive about her, Mr. Lashwood.
Am I? Well, maybe I don't like the presumptions you seem to be making.
Tell me, who were her particular friends? Who might be able to tell us where to find her?
I really don't know. I suppose you could check with her parents. They live in Wetherby, I think. She may have gone there for the weekend. Well, hold on. I've got the address here somewhere.
Has she got a car?
Yes, sir. An old banger. Anglia, I think. Afraid I don't know the number. Ah. Tell me something, Commander. It's been a week since the kidnapping. This morning, the Daily Express suggested that the Prime Minister could be dead. What do you think?
I remember the house where I was born. The little window where the sun came peeping in at morn. He never came a wink too soon, nor brought too long a day, but now I often wish the night had borne my breath away. I remember the roses red and white.
Still reciting poetry, are we? Typical bourgeois occupation.
What do you want?
Do you know what some of your newspapers are saying, Mr. Prime Minister? They are burying you already. There is speculation that you might be dead. What do you think of that? No comment. The point surely is, that if we kill you, they won't be surprised. If I shoot you with this...
Oh, we're back to guns, are we?
Everything comes back to guns in the end, isn't that so?
Use it, for God's sake. If you're going to fire, get on with it.
Anything to oblige.
Very funny.
Next time it will be loaded, and you will die laughing. Do you know anything about guns, Mr. Prime Minister?
No.
Of course not. Why should you? You're the Prime Minister. You can order others to do the killing for you. And, of course, there's nothing evil about a gun. It all depends whose finger is on the trigger. Really, it's a mistake to call them guns, you know. I mean, this is a pistol. That's the proper term for it, an automatic pistol. Well, semi-automatic, really. You have to pull the trigger for each shot. It's a Luger. A Luger 9mm 8 shot. It has a double-action hammer. You can carry it without bothering about the safety catch. Some people prefer revolvers, and they are more reliable in a way, more flexible. What are you staring at?
Nothing. I find the lecture fascinating and very revealing.
Don't patronize me, old man. Don't patronize me for your own sake.
You're waiting, Valchek.
Coming. Put the blindfold on, Stoddart.
Is that
Put it on.
All right. But this is the last time. After this, no more play acting.
Get moving!
Right, thank you, Inspector. Sergeant Bellamy.
Sir?
Put out a general on this registration number. Pronto.
Sir?
The owner is a Miss Susan Swinton. She's to be held for questioning. Urgent.
Will do, sir. Can I get your coffee? Sandwich? You've enough?
I said that was urgent, Sergeant.
Sir?
What's new?
Now, the Weatherby police got the registration number of the girl's car from her father. Seems he gave it to her last Christmas. I'll put out a general on it.
Good. Now, listen. Ben Tompkins, that boy we put under surveillance. He was on the list of people with Piper Cherokee aircraft. We haven't lost him, I hope.
No, sir. He was last reported having lunch at a Chinese restaurant in Kensington. That was, oh, let me see, about an hour ago. I suppose he's still there.
Tell Martin to bring him in.
Something new?
I've just been talking to Cadwell of Special Branch. They've got a file on our friend. Tompkins was up to his ears in ultra-left-wing politics at university. Called himself Jake Tompkins then.
Ah.
Up to 18 months ago, he was still involved. Then he came into money and practically changed overnight.
Ah, that figures, sir. Amazing what a little money can do to your principal.
This wasn't a little, it was a lot. More than enough to finance this kidnapping operation.
And you reckon he deliberately turned respectable as a cover?
Like I said, tell Martin to bring him in. And then we shall find out.
Mr. Tompkins?
Yes? Oh, my friend, the policeman, Detective Inspector Martin.
Yes, sir.
Not again. What can I do for you this time?
I wonder if you'd mind coming with me, sir. A few more questions, you understand.
Oh, it's a bit much, Inspector. I'm entertaining this young lady.
That's right.
And I really don't see how I can help any further.
I'm sure the young lady will find her way home, Mr. Tompkins.
Well,
now, if you'd please...
What are you doing?
Hold him, Hollis, hold him! Get out of my way or you'll get this!
I dropped that!
You heard me! Get back!
Drop that bottle or I'll break your arm. Right. Now come on, Tompkins.
Pig! Pig!
Now, Mr. Prime Minister, we've been very patient. We've allowed you to see your wife.
How is she?
She's well, and we've given you time to think. Are you ready now to make a statement?
What about...
Oh, stop stalling.
Malchick, leave this to me, please. We want you to make a statement, a public statement, in which you openly confess your political errors, in which you expose your betrayal of the British working class and of your former socialist principles.
A public statement, you say?
Of course. We shall see that it receives the widest circulation. It'll be a valuable political document. For the first time, the workers will clearly see the true character of reformist leaders like you. The true extent of your corruption.
If you believe that, you're either stupid or naive.
Don't strain my patience, Mr. Prime Minister.
You want a confession? All right. I'll give you one.
That's better.
I doubt if it'll please you. A confession? Let me see. I'm almost 60 years of age, and it would be a miracle if I'd managed to survive that long without some degree of corruption setting in. It's a question of degree, you see. Do you know the trouble with ideals? They can't stand up to experience. Maybe that's why we call them ideals. Because they're impossible of achievement. Because they are dreams that demand a perfection in people that doesn't exist, never has existed, and probably never will exist.
That's the fault of the system. In an ideal system of society...
Oh, for God's sake, must you always think in slogans? An ideal system presupposes ideal people. You can't have one without the other, right? Seen any ideal people lately, brother? In Russia... China, Britain, America? People, my friend, are, well, people. Kind, generous, gentle, unselfish, and treacherous, cruel, self-seeking, bloody-minded. There are no ideal people. We're all flawed. A pity, but it's true.
So, what you're saying is that you abandon your ideals, and with them you abandon the people, the working class.
No. The fact is, you do your best. It may look like damn all at the end of the day, but you keep going. Perhaps it's the memory of those old ideals that spurs you on. You learn to compromise. You settle for a point somewhere between the ideal and the practical, between what's right and what's possible. You settle for a half or a quarter, for something. That's what politics is all about. That's why it's called the art of the possible.
Interesting. An interesting admission.
The typical social fascist outlook. He is rotten, rotten to the core.
Yes. So, now I think we'll proceed with the trial.
Trial?
Oh, yes. Did you think we were finished? We're going to put you on trial, Prime Minister, for crimes against the people.
You will be tried by a revolutionary court.
You are mad.
Victor, could I have a word?
Can't it wait?
No, it is urgent.
Very well. What is it?
Alan just rang through on the internal phone. A police car has pulled up at the main gate.
Right. Velchik?
Yes?
Red alert. Take the prisoner down. Then tell the others to stand by.
What do you think then, Bert? I don't reckon we need bother with this place, do you?
Well, we were told to check every house, Sarge. No exceptions.
Oh, I know. But this is different. It's government. You look at that sign over there. Institute of Industrial and Technological Development. Research Division. Well, I mean, that's official. In any case, I'm hot and hungry.
Well, I still think we ought to check, Sarge.
Afternoon, Sergeant. Oh. What can I do for you?
Well, we're just making a routine check. Been a lot of robberies at isolated premises lately, you see. Places like this. We're dropping the odd word of warning and checking the general security precautions.
Oh, I think you'll find we're in pretty good order here, Sergeant. Have to be. Important work.
Are you a security man?
That's right.
Don't recognise the uniform.
Oh, we're on the staff. In-house security, you might say. Oh. Look, pop into the lodge, and I'll show you what we've done. And I can offer you a beer at the same time.
What's happening now?
They've just gone into the lodge with Alan.
Well, if anybody can bamboozle them, it'll be him.
There we are, Sergeant. Two nice cold beers.
I'm very welcome, too. You do yourself well, yeah?
Yeah, why not?
Right, why not? Well, cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
I needed that. You one of ours, eh? From the valleys?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm from the west, the real Wales. Oh, in Glendower country, you know.
I'm from the Merthyr myself.
This place, what exactly do they do here?
Oh, well, it says, I suppose. Must confess I don't know much about it. Research into the problems of industry, whatever that may mean.
Official, is it?
Well, sort of, yeah.
I mean, like, tied up with government, like?
Well, I imagine so. They've only been here a few weeks, you know, still setting up. About a dozen people here so far, but they reckon it'll be nearer 200 by the finish. It's all pretty hush-hush stuff.
And you control the security from here, do you?
Yeah, more or less. This panel here, all these switches, they do the work. For instance, the main gates can't be opened, even manually, unless this switch is in the on position. And this switch sounds an alarm up at the house. Right. Now, this one switches on floodlights, and of course I have direct internal communication. We have a firm coming to install an electronic system which will protect the house and the perimeter fences.
Pretty comprehensive.
Oh, money no object. Actually, the man you ought to talk to is Professor Wilmot. He's the chief boffin. I doubt if he can tell you more than I can, but if you'd like to see him...
Well, it might be a good idea.
No,
actually...
I don't think we need to bother him. You seem to have everything buttoned up pretty well. No, we'll see him another time.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, we'll be on our way then. Thanks for the beer.
Yeah, thanks very much. Sure.
Any time. Nice talking to you.
Hello?
Victor, all clear. They've gone, and I doubt if they'll be back.
How many?
Two. Local men.
What were they after?
Oh, they made some excuse about a spate of burglaries in the area, but I reckon the police are making a general check.
Did they mention the Prime Minister?
Not a word. Neither did I.
Now listen, Alan. There'll be a unit meeting tonight. We're proposing to put Stoddart on trial tomorrow.
Makes sense. The sooner the better in my book.
Right. See you at 7, then.
Well?
No, sir. Tompkins refuses to talk.
What the hell do you mean?
Oh, just that. He hasn't uttered a word since we brought him in.
But he's up to his ears in this business. Yeah. We've checked his papers. He went to Paris last Thursday, a day trip. He must have delivered that communique to the British consulate.
I tried him with that, sir. Same result. Silence. Now, what about the girl, sir? Sue Swinton.
She hasn't been traced.
Think she's gone to grain, sir?
God knows. Wiley, I've got this prickly feeling at the back of my neck. I think we're running out of time.
We've had no communication from the kidnappers for 3 days. Well, anything could have happened.
Well, I've got a couple of heavy chaps in the team, sir. Shall I turn them loose on Tompkins?
I don't know. Maybe it is time we took off the kid gloves. Yes, tell your fellows I don't actually want anything broken,
sir.
But short of that, I want to see Tompkins so rabid scared that he'll sing until sundown.
Be merciful unto me, O God, be merciful unto me, for my soul taketh refuge in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I take refuge until these calamities be overpast. I will cry unto God most high, unto God that performeth all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save me when he that would swallow me up cometh. God shall send forth his mercy and truth. Amen.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Goddard. I didn't mean to interrupt your prayers. I brought your supper.
Oh, it wasn't a prayer. It was from the Psalms. Well, I suppose it was a sort of prayer, really.
Are you religious?
Not enough. I believe in God, but I'm selfish about it.
How do you mean?
I use God. I only go to him when I want something and feel guilty about that. Oh, well, that's my problem. I dare say he'll forgive me.
I brought some more knitting wool and a couple of magazines.
Oh, thank you. Tell me, Jane, there's something I've been meaning to ask you. Have you got a boyfriend? Well, did I say something wrong?
Do you think that's all there is for a woman? To have a boyfriend, get married, raise a family? That without a man, she is nothing?
Yes, of course, I should have realised. You're all for this women's lib.
Oh, don't insult me. Women's lib is rubbish, a bourgeois diversion. It deflects women away from the main revolutionary struggle.
Oh, I see.
Freedom for women must be seen in the context of the wider battle to liberate the whole of mankind.
Oh, it's odd how you go on about liberty.
I'll bring you a pamphlet, if you like. It'll explain our attitude.
No, thanks all the same. I'm not a great one for reading political stuff. I've always left the politics to Jack, to my husband.
It might have been better if you had taken an interest. What? You're honest, at least. You're an honest person. Your husband sold out. He might have been able to stop him doing that.
No, he's always done his best.
Garbage. You must have seen a change in him. I mean, when he was young, when you were first married, he was great. Some of the speeches he made then were terrific. But in the past 10 years, he sold out for power and position.
Oh, look, Jane, you just don't understand.
That's right, I don't understand. I don't understand why you defend him, why you've stuck by him. You've seen him change from a man to a windbag, and you've stayed on. If I ever married a man or lived with one, I wouldn't stick it for a minute if he turned rotten on me. I'm not speaking of sex and all that. He could have 100 other women. I'm talking about the things that matter. People, justice, freedom. If he betrayed those, I'd be off.
I'm sorry, I can't think in your terms. Oh, there were times, a few, when I was tempted to leave Jack, but not for your sort of reasons. No, it was because he'd hurt me. Well, there's nothing new in that. Everyone gets hurt sometimes.
How did he hurt you?
I don't know. Well, maybe he did change in the way you said, but he changed in other personal ways, too, and, well, I was no longer important to him, except as someone who could appear at his side in public and give him the stamp of respectability.
Oh, that's awful.
No, you learn to cope, to adjust, and after a while it doesn't hurt so much. The truth is...
The truth is, you still love him, in spite of everything.
Oh, yes. Yes, I suppose I do. In spite of and because of everything.
Like I said, you're an honest person. You're a fool, but you are honest. Well, enjoy your supper. I must go.
How is my husband?
He's well.
I doubt that. When can I see him?
Tomorrow. I think you'll see him tomorrow.
When? What time?
At the trial.
Trial?
No more questions. I'll bring you some of our literature next time I come. When you read that, you'll know what we stand for.
Don't bother. I know what you stand for. Freedom. Only you have a funny way of showing it. You kidnap people and lock them up.
Ah, Jane.
How's the patient?
She's not a patient.
You know what I mean.
She's as well as can be expected.
I wonder how she'll react tomorrow.
You're not really going to have her at the trial.
Of course. It should be interesting.
Victor, that is sadistic.
Jane, your sentimentality is showing again. I wonder if it has anything to do with your background.
Oh, God, we're not back to that, are we?
No, listen, it's true. I was toughened in the back streets of Islington, and you, well, you had it easy. Public school, top university, and your family is loaded. You've never felt it here, in the guts. That's where belief begins, love, in the guts. The rationale comes afterwards.
That's elitist nonsense, and you know it.
No, your attitude is conditioned by your background. You've never known pain. That's why you're sentimental about it.
Perhaps in certain ways I am squeamish. Perhaps I'm immature in that respect. But that hasn't affected my faith in what we're trying to achieve. I want us to succeed.
Even if it means executing the Prime Minister?
Executing?
Of course. At his trial tomorrow, he'll almost certainly be found guilty of betraying the working class. The court will then pass sentence. I shall vote for execution. How about you?
Operations room, County Police HQ.
Sergeant Macy, put me through to D.I. Wiley.
Don't you ever say please. Hold on. Macy?
The girl has just driven into the forecourt of the apartment block, sir. Car registration number checks, and she answers the description of Susan Swinton.
Was she alone?
Yes, sir.
Where is she now?
She went to the 10th floor, sir. The lights are showing there now.
Right. Now listen carefully. Who have you got with you?
Morgan and Phelps, sir.
Right. Close in. Now if she tries to leave the flat, arrest her. Otherwise, hold it under surveillance until I get there. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Macy?
Sir?
Are there any back stairs?
I don't know, sir.
Well, damn well find out. And see that they're covered.
Sir?
I'll be with you in 10 minutes, Macy. 15 at the most. Don't let this one get away, will you?
You again. What is it now?
Jane has brought you some supper.
I am not hungry.
Don't be hasty. You see? Something of an improvement on your usual fare.
Hot coffee, bacon, eggs and toast.
And a condemned man ate a hearty supper.
And that's one way of looking at it. However, you've not been formally condemned as yet. That's for the tribunal to decide at your trial.
Trial?
I would advise you to take it seriously, Mr. Prime Minister. I assure you we will. So much so that we've appointed Jane here to outline the procedure and to advise you on your rights as the defendant.
And if I refuse to participate in this charade?
You will be present, Mr. Prime Minister, whether you like it or not. You will have the right to speak in your own defence. If you choose not to exercise that right, well, that's your decision. Carol will be outside if you need him, Jane.
It won't be necessary. Right. Why don't you have your supper before it gets cold? We can talk as you eat.
I told you I am not hungry. But I will have some of that coffee. How's my wife?
We are not here to discuss her.
How is she, damn you?
Well.
She's not. I mean, she.
She's not on trial, if that's what you mean. There are no charges against her. She's here more by accident than design, and as soon as practicable, she'll be released unharmed.
That's all I want to know.
Your concern puzzles me.
She is my wife.
Really? I think it would be more fitting to describe her as your political appendage. The symbol of respectability without which no politician is complete.
That's not true.
Lie to yourself if you must, Mr. Stoddart, but don't bother to lie to me. You don't give a damn for your wife. We've done our homework, you see. How many other women have you had? 9? 10? The wife of a parliamentary colleague? That girl from the research department? The secretary in Strasbourg? I could give you the names. I'm not criticising your sexual morality. That's your affair.
Thank you.
But I do oppose the use of any human being as an object, which is exactly how you used your wife. As a political convenience, nothing more. God, when I think about it, you used her shamelessly. And she stood for it. She put up with it year after year. You know something, Mr. Prime Minister? You are not fit to lace her shoes.
I know that. You don't have to tell me. I know that.
You see, your time with us hasn't been wasted. You have confessed to something at last. Shall we get on with the details of the trial?
We need some quick answers, Wiley, even if we've got to frighten them out of her.
Leave it to me, sir.
Oh, Mr. Knowles.
Come on.
What?
In there,
oh,
lady.
Listen.
I want to talk to you.
Shut up. Now, would you mind explaining?
Shut up!
What? How dare you?
I said shut up. I'll tell you when to speak. I'm going down to the car to use the radio, Inspector. I shall be back in 5 minutes. Please cooperate with Detective Inspector Wiley, Miss Swinton, for your own sake.
Now, you red bitch. You treacherous little red bitch. Let us begin.
Death May Surprise Us by Ted Willis starred Leslie Sands as Jack Stoddart, Mary Wimbush as Jess Stoddart, Cyril Shapps as Victor, and Jeffrey Matthews as Commander Knowles. Hugh Lashwood was Preston Lockwood, Valchik, Anthony Daniels, Carol, Jonathan Owen, Inspector Wiley, Scott Cherry, Woman Police Sergeant Bellamy, Ellen McIntosh, Detective Inspector Martin, Colin Starkey, Ben Tompkins, David Googe, Sergeant Evans, John Strickland, Alan Peplow, William Edel, Jane, Moya Leslie, Sergeant Macy and Wallace, Brett Usher, and Sue Swinton was Charlotte Long. Death May Surprise Us is dramatized by Ted Willis from his novel of the same name, and the serial is directed by Graham Gall.